Hello, everyone. This is Steve Baker with another 5 in 10. From yesterday to today, the news cycle hasn't really changed much. In fact, nothing really new or big is developing. The Department of Justice and the mainstream media are still covering for the Bidens. Trump is still facing more indictments. The DeSantis and Trump camps are intensifying their sniping at each other, and the White House cocaine gate memes are raging on social media. So anyway, here are five things that I find particularly interesting. Number one, someone asked me just this morning if there was an update as to why hashtag Pink Beret, the infamous J6 suspect, has not been yet arrested. My answer was, yes, I do know. I have known actually for almost 2 months. Why have I not reported on her whereabouts? I was actually under obligation to a source until I received the green light to go public. There's also the problem of verifying the facts and the details about the info that I was given. But first, for those unaware, who is hashtag Pink Beret? I'm going to give you a very brief overview, but post a link to the full background wherever this podcast is posted. First, hashtag Pink Beret. That's the name given to her by the online sleuths known as the Sedition Hunters. Her real name is Jennifer Inzunza Vargas Geller, and she's been known to the FBI and Sedition Hunters for more than 2 years without charges or arrest. She was a prominent Ray Epps-like provocateur at the Capitol on January 6th. She was actually at the initial West Side barricade breach, very near Ray Epps and the others who pushed past Capitol Police in that violent first breach. After racing up to the Capitol in her high heels and pink beret and designer clothes, she began a series of actions which included waving people toward the Capitol. And then after the building was breached, she used a stick which looked like a baton and used that to wave and point others in the Capitol's direction. She even stood and held open one door as people entered and exited through that particular area of the Capitol. She also engaged in two very interesting actions which resulted actually in the arrest of two other protesters. When the outdoor media area that was barricaded off for camera personnel was torn down by some of the more violent provocateurs, she actually reached down and picked up a very large, heavy duffel bag full of camera equipment, and then she handed it to a man. She also took another man by the hand and led him into the Capitol. Then she found and handed him a duffel bag full of police gear, after which she then took off her pink beret and ducked down on an escalator, hiding from that man while he looked for her. That man, his name is Daryl Neely, and his attorney ultimately filed a motion with the Department of Justice after facing charges for his crimes, requesting the identity of hashtag Pink Beret because of ample high-definition photography and facial recognition of her. The FBI surely knew her identity. The Epoch Times wrote a story about this filing, calling then-unknown Jennifer Geller a potential femme fatale. Shortly thereafter, NBC News reported that hashtag Pink Beret had now been identified by a tip submitted to the FBI from Jennifer Geller's former boyfriend. Now, the ex-boyfriend claimed that their relationship came to a sudden end because of her, quote-unquote, far-right politics and because he caught her reading Mein Kampf, the infamous book by the infamous Adolf Hitler. 2 days later, on May 8th of this year, NBC reported that Jennifer Geller had been charged with 4 misdemeanors for her activities on January 6th. As of now, 2 months later, Geller has still not been arrested. Shortly thereafter, I learned that Geller was not arrested because she was out of the country, where I didn't know at the time, but I did actually find her personal phone number. On May 17th, I sent her a series of messages asking her for an interview. She finally just simply responded to me with a text that said, "No, thank you." I also learned she had apparently married the man that she had traveled to D.C. with from California. His name is Spencer Geller. Tracing his family background, I learned that his mother was living in Thailand. Then my original source revealed to me that the Gellers now had a child and were actually living there in Thailand. In short, as is typically the practice, charging documents are held under seal until the suspect has been arrested. But in this case, those documents were made public before her arrest, but without any information from the DOJ of Pink Beret's whereabouts and why she has not been pursued or arrested. Thailand does, in fact, have an extradition treaty with the U.S., but the Department of Justice seems to have no interest in bringing her back to face her January 6 charges. Some dismiss this as, why would they? for just misdemeanor charges. But I asked, why didn't the Department of Justice tell us where she was? Because it's impossible that I know and that the FBI doesn't know where she is. And why didn't they make that information known to Daryl Neely's attorney during the trial? As I said, for more background, I'll provide the link to my May 10th story on Pink Beret below. On a side note, I doubt the claim of any January 6th figure who claims that they were in Washington, D.C. to support Trump on January 6th, but were then already at the West Capitol barricades by 12:30 that afternoon, and not at the Ellipse over a mile away listening to Trump's speech, which began only at noon and didn't conclude until he left the stage at 1:16 p.m. To tell me that Jennifer Geller and her then-boyfriend Spencer Geller flew all the way across the country with the additional expenses of being in D.C. to support Trump, but was instead acting as a provocateur at the Capitol in high heels and designer clothes, luring others inside the building and handing men stolen duffel bags, really? Then remained unidentified for over 2 years until after a court motion had been filed, and then an ex-boyfriend dropped a dime on her, and then the DOJ released info about her charges, but not her location and why she's not been arrested. Do I have all the details on this case? No, I could only get those by going to Thailand, probably, or if members of the family would respond to my repeated requests for interviews. But the source revealing Pink Beret's new residence in Thailand is pretty solid. The rest, I have to be very careful about and do the best I can to make sure that I'm not being set up for the purpose of embarrassing me for spreading false information. So you know what I know. Anyway, I still have questions, a lot of questions. And no, this isn't the big story I mentioned in yesterday's 5 and 10. That one is coming as soon as we get all the loose ends tied up and determine the best venue in which to release it. So stay tuned on that one. Number two, from the New York Times to NBC to the Washington Post and beyond, the mainstream media is circling their wagons in opposition to the Louisiana federal court ruling against the Biden administration's efforts to suppress misinformation on social media. According to the Washington Post, the State Department has now canceled its regular weekly meetings with Facebook officials in which they discuss the 2024 election preparations and hacking threats. They say the canceled meetings show that the injunction is affecting government's efforts to protect elections. Protect, they say, not influence, as they clearly did in 2020. The New York Times reports that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention officials held weekly sync meetings with Facebook, giving them the names of pages that posted misinformation. Ryan Riley, an NBC correspondent, claimed that the FBI isn't policing social media enough, saying on MSNBC, "It's not as though the FBI has been going in and saying, hey, take down this post." Well, Ryan, that's literally what they were doing in 2020, as Mark Zuckerberg himself admitted on the Joe Rogan podcast. Maybe the FBI wasn't ordering Facebook to take down posts, but Zuckerberg certainly did the FBI's urging. So, the mainstream media and big tech are freaking out about this ruling that the Biden administration intends to appeal because it limits their ability to directly influence big tech's censorship effort in the lead up to the 2024 election. Number three, Meta, the parent company to Facebook and Instagram, has launched a competitor to Twitter called Threads, claiming more than 10 million users have already signed up. CEO Mark Zuckerberg says Threads is a friendly alternative to Twitter. Journalist Michael Schellenberger has noted that within a few hours of launching, Threads was already secretly censoring users and not offering them the right to appeal. He continued by saying, "As such, it's reasonable to expect that Meta will censor precisely the same way that the large news media corporations, including the New York Times and corporate advertisers, want it to. More censorship is what the mainstream news media, big corporations, and their celebrity pitch people have been demanding." Another user, Derek Utley, he posted a screenshot which immediately after Threads' launch was already warning users, "Are you sure you want to follow real Derek Utley? This account has repeatedly posted false information." Wow. That was fast. Anyway, you won't find me on Threads. Number four, the new movie, Sound of Freedom, a true story about the horrors of child trafficking starring Jim Caviezel, beat up the new Disney Indiana Jones sequel with a record 4th of July box office. The movie grossed over $14 million, and Indiana Jones reportedly brought in only $11.5 million. Sound of Freedom is based on the true story of former Homeland Security agent Tim Ballard, who quit his job with the government to begin rescuing children from human traffickers and pedophiles and avoid the prohibitions being imposed upon him by his higher-ups in the government agency that he worked for. Many of my readers are aware that I spent a major effort last year pursuing a couple of child trafficking stories myself down in Texas, one of which I actually rode shotgun with a private investigator who had been given a particular case directly from the FBI. Why? Well, because they were too busy on other matters and short on manpower, presumably part of which was chasing down misdemeanor January 6 trespassers. I can't wait myself to get back down there for a follow-up, and I can't wait to see this movie. Number 5. Well, the Eagles have announced what they are calling their final tour dates. The biggest-selling American band's final tour will also have the additional draw of having Steely Dan as their opening act on this tour. Easily, these are two of America's most talented and important bands, so this one will be one for the record books, and I plan on attending if I can afford the tickets. If ever there was an evening that one can say is the soundtrack of one's life, and for me personally, my formative years as a musician myself, this show will be one such event. Tickets go on sale July 12th, and the tour will open September 7th in New York at Madison Square Garden. Fortunately for me, they have already announced two dates here in my state of North Carolina, so I won't have to go far. All right, that's it for today. Please consider joining my locals community, where I share content I don't put out anywhere else. It is free to subscribe, but for as little as $5 a month, you can help me with my continued investigations into government weaponization and also about my ongoing revelations about what really happened on January 6th. Simply go to tpc4usa.com. From your app store, you can download the Locals app and then search for @tpc4usa. Thanks a bunch, and I will see you again tomorrow with another 5 and 10.